crossed. VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Dan Friedel, and Anna Mateo. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, the United Nations confirmed earlier this month that it had accepted a request from Turkey to change the country's official name. Now, its name is Turkiye. Stefan Dujarric is a spokesman for the UN Secretary General. He said that the change was in effect from the moment they received the request letter. The information came from the Turkish news organization Anadolu Agency. Turkiye is how the country's name is pronounced in Turkish. The move is seen as a part of a push by Turkey to separate itself from the turkey bird and some undesirable meanings related with it. In December, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan ordered the use of Turkiye to better represent Turkish culture and values. The order included a demand that Made in Turkiye be used instead of Made in Turkey on exported products. Turkish government agencies began using Turkiye in official documents. Earlier this year, the government released a video as part of its efforts to change its name in English. The video shows visitors from around the world saying, "Hello, Turkiye," at famous places. Government officials said they began the campaign to promote more effectively the use of Turkiye as the country's national and international name on international platforms. It is not clear whether the name will become widely used internationally. In 2016, the Czech Republic officially registered its shortened name, Czechia. While some international organizations use the name, many still refer to the country as the Czech Republic. Turkey's English-language state broadcaster, TRT World, has started using the name Turkiye. But sometimes, journalists will accidentally say the word Turkey as they get used to the change. TRT World explained the decision in an article earlier this year. They said that searching for Turkey online brings up other results related to the turkey, a large bird native to North America. The network added that in the Cambridge Dictionary, turkey is defined as something that fails badly or a stupid or silly person. TRT World argued that Turks prefer their country to be called Turkiye in keeping with the country's aims of determining how others should identify it.
Thank you. A Japanese man has become the oldest person to complete a solo, non-stop sailing trip across the Pacific Ocean. 83-year-old Kenichi Hori returned to his home port off Japan's western coast on Saturday. His trans-Pacific trip began in San Francisco in late March. It took 69 days to complete. Hori spent the night aboard his 6-meter-long sailboat before he was welcomed back Sunday by community members and supporters at the port of Shin Nishinomiya. Upon arrival, Hori took off his hat and waved to the crowd from his boat. Later, he met with supporters and was presented with flowers. "Thank you for waiting," Hori said. He had carried a supply of medicine in case he got sick, but he said the only things he used during his more than 2 months at sea were eye drops and Band-Aids. "That shows how healthy I am," Hori said. "I'm still in the middle of my youth." Hori added that it felt like the trip had burned all my body and soul, but he said he is still ready for more exciting experiences. "I will keep up my work to be a late bloomer." Hori told reporters that setting the record for the oldest person to complete the trip was a dream come true. He said it brought happiness to have been able to make a challenge as a real goal and safely achieve it instead of just holding on to it as a dream. "I want to be a challenger as long as I live," Hori added. In 1962, he became the first person in the world to sail a solo non-stop trip across the Pacific from Japan to San Francisco. 60 years later, he traveled the opposite path. Soon after leaving San Francisco, Hori faced stormy weather, but conditions improved after that, and he was able to reach Hawaii sooner than expected in mid-April. Hori said he had struggled toward the end of his trip with pushback from some strong waves. In an internet report Friday, he said he felt close to success but was exhausted. Hori has completed several long-distance solo trips. In 1974, he sailed solo around the world. His latest success was the first trip since 2008, when he traveled solo on a wave-powered boat from Hawaii to Japan's Kii Strait. Despite sailing on his own, technology helped him keep in touch with family members and others throughout the trip. "I imagine my next voyage would be even more fun," he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Spain's Rafael Nadal won his 14th French Open championship over the weekend. It was his 22nd major tennis tournament victory of his career. The four major tennis tournaments are the Australian Open, the French Open, Wimbledon, and the U.S. Open. A player wins the Grand Slam if they win all four tournaments in the same year. Nadal now has two more major wins than his rivals, Roger Federer of Switzerland and Novak Djokovic of Serbia. Nadal defeated Norway's Casper Ruud on Sunday in Paris. After his win, he said he may have to stop playing professional tennis because of foot pain. He said he had to receive pain-killing shots in his foot in order to play in the tournament. Nadal said he only accepted the pain-killing shots because the French Open is so important for him. At any other tournament, Nadal said, he would not have continued playing under such extreme conditions. Nadal is 36 years old. He is the oldest ever champion of the French Open, which began in 1925. Nadal said he could not feel his foot during Sunday's match. He is looking for other treatments that may help him keep playing. He said one possibility is to have a medical procedure that would burn the nerve that causes the pain. Howard Fendrich writes about tennis for the Associated Press. He called Nadal indefatigable, someone who can do something for a very long time without becoming tired. Nadal played 2 4-hour matches in the tournament, including one against Djokovic, the world's top player. If the nerve treatments do not work, Nadal said he will have to think about what's the next step in my future. He said, I can't and I don't want to keep going if he can only play using painkillers. He thanked his family and supporters, including a doctor, for helping him in Paris. Without the doctor, he said, he would have had to give up earlier. I don't know what can happen in the future, Nadal said, but I'm going to keep fighting to try and keep going. Fendrich described Nadal's play as crisp and clean on Sunday, noting he hit 21 more winning shots than Ruud and made 10 fewer mistakes. Nadal has never lost when he has made the French Open final. The next big tournament is Wimbledon near London. It starts in 3 weeks. Those who follow tennis like Fendrich said it is unclear if Nadal will play. Nadal said tennis has been important in his life. He called it a priority. However, he said, it has not been more important than his own happiness. If I am still able to be happy playing tennis, I'm going to keep going. If I am not able, I'm going to do other things. Whatever happens, Fendrich said, Nadal's place in the sport's history is safe. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. People who grow fruit and vegetables in their gardens may worry about which plants to plant near each other. Some plants grow well together, while others do not. Studying which plants grow best together in nature can reduce the need for fertilizers and chemicals used to kill harmful insects and unwanted plants, or weeds. Jessica Damiano is a gardening expert. She often writes about the subject for the Associated Press. Damiano said Native Americans knew about companion planting hundreds of years ago. The Native American method of growing corn, beans, and squash together is a well-known example. They are called the Three Sisters. Companion planting puts plants together that help each other grow, like corn, beans, and squash do. For those three, this is how it works. As the squash grows, its large prickly leaves cover the ground. They block the sun to keep roots cool. They also keep out weeds and animals. Corn grows tall to support the vines of the beans. And the beans help bring nitrogen into the soil to fertilize all three plants. Damiano added that other members of the bean family, such as peas and lentils, take nitrogen from the air. They then change it into a form that nourishes the soil and the plants growing in it. At the end of a growing season, alfalfa or clover can be planted in cleared-out vegetable fields. This adds valuable nutrients to the soil. With those nutrients, you may not need fertilizer during the next growing season. Some plants repel or keep away insects. Some plants also can protect against disease. For example, basil repels these insects: mites, aphids, mosquitoes, and tomato hornworms. So growing basil next to tomato plants is a good idea. Basil also has antifungal qualities. Tomatoes, in turn, protect asparagus from beetles. Tomatoes also can protect roses from black spot, an often deadly fungal disease. French and African marigolds give off a chemical that repels many insects and kills some kinds of worms. Eelworms, for example, can damage the roots of vegetable and fruit crops. Chrysanthemums produce natural chemicals that repel ticks, fleas, mosquitoes, flies, and other insects. The chemicals, known as pyrethrins, do their job so well that they have been copied to create manufactured insect repellents. Damiano asked, "Why treat your plants with laboratory-made chemicals when they come from something naturally available and safe?" If your garden has slugs, Damiano suggests growing lavender. Similarly, chives keep aphids from lettuce and roses. Sage repels cabbage moths. Oregano and radishes protect against squash beetles and cucumber beetles. Damiano says zinnias and parsnips draw ladybugs to your garden.
Ladybugs eat many aphids and cabbage flies. Parsley and dill also draw ladybugs, but choose one or the other. They do not grow well together. You also want to keep tomatoes away from potatoes, cabbage, and fennel. Tomatoes might make it hard for those plants to grow. On the other hand, you do want to grow nasturtiums near tomatoes and squash. This edible flower improves the flavor of these vegetables growing nearby. Be careful with sunflowers. They can stop the growth of beans and potatoes. Also be careful with onions and garlic. They will hurt the growth of your asparagus, beans, leeks, and parsley. But onions and garlic help beets, cabbage, carrots, lettuce, sage, strawberries, and tomatoes. Onion and garlic protect them against insects and diseases. Cabbage and cauliflower are in the same vegetable family. But Damiano says not to plant them next to each other. Like family members who argue, they should be seated separately at the dinner table. Damiano reminds us to plant friends with friends, and everyone will get along. Your garden will thank you. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
Sometimes a visit to a national park means hiking rugged trails and climbing high mountains. Other times, it means crawling through caves or rafting down a wild river. But we want to take it easier. So, we head south to the state of Arkansas. It is home to a national park that is perfect for resting and renewing a tired body. Visitors treat themselves to one of its natural thermal baths. Humans have been enjoying the warm waters for thousands of years. Welcome to Hot Springs National Park.
Most national parks are far from cities and industry, but Hot Springs is different. It covers more than 2,200 hectares in and around the city of Hot Springs, Arkansas. Congress approved special protection of the area in 1832. Known unofficially as America's Spa, it became a national park in 1921. The park's geothermal springs and other resources have long been used for therapeutic bathing. The average temperature of the hot springs is 61 degrees Celsius. The thermal mineral waters reportedly help ease many health problems, including arthritis and rheumatism. The springs emerge along the western edge of Hot Springs Mountain. Scientists say the hot springs are made of rainwater that fell in the Hot Springs area thousands of years ago. The rainwater slowly dripped down to the Earth's crust. When water rises back up to the surface quickly and does not have a chance to cool, hot springs form.
Hot Springs National Park's early bathhouses were simple structures. They were made of canvas and lumber. They were built right over some of the natural springs. Later, businessmen built more complex wooden structures. But those structures were frequently damaged by fires and from exposure to water and steam. Beginning in the early 1900s, stone, stucco, and brick structures replaced the wooden bathhouse buildings. These large and much more elaborate structures still stand today, along what is known as Bathhouse Row. These bathhouses were built along the eastern bank of Hot Springs Creek. The hot water from the hillside springs flows down a system of wooden troughs and into the buildings.
Each spring was said to help cure different kinds of conditions. Some of the early names referred to their chemical properties. Others were named after the part of the body that its waters could best help. There was once a spring called Kidney, and another named Liver. 8 buildings line Bathhouse Row today. They are very large. Many of them are 3 levels. But most of them no longer offer therapeutic water treatments. Instead, they house park shops and the visitor's center. But one has remained open for more than 100 years. The Buckstaff Bathhouse has operated continuously since 1912. It is one of the best preserved bathhouses within Hot Springs National Park. Visitors today can enjoy traditional thermal mineral baths. The baths are different temperatures and have different properties.
Another bathhouse offers a more modern spa experience. Quapaw Baths and Spa also sits along Bathhouse Row. It was renovated and reopened in 2007 on Hot Springs' 175th anniversary. When you are done with your relaxing bath, there is still more to enjoy at Hot Springs National Park. Visitors can hike along the more than 43 kilometers of trails in the park. You will find unusual rock formations and views of the surrounding rolling hills. The landscape provides evidence of the area's hot spring history. On the Tufa Terrace Trail, you will see huge deposits of tufa created by the flowing springs over thousands of years. Tufa is a kind of rock shaped by water.
But you do not have to hike to see the sights. There are beautiful mountain roads to drive as well. However you explore Hot Springs National Park, you can't help but relax. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.